Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter, and today we're going to be talking about the SmackDown that aired on November 20th, 2020, the go-home episode of SmackDown, as we get ready for the Survivor Series pay-per-view that will take place this Sunday. This episode of SmackDown itself, It was a so-so episode. I mean, of course, you got a little bit of Raw people that showed up. You guys know how I feel about that. Was not too excited. But nonetheless, it happened. You can expect that to happen around this time of year. So I'm not really going to, you know, go too crazy about that. Also, it's 2:20 in the morning on Saturday morning. So it is pretty late. And I might not just have it in me to go on a, you know, a rant about that stuff tonight. So I will save you guys that, but however, because it is so late, unfortunately, I probably will not have a top five for you on this episode. I really like doing those, so I am definitely kind of bummed out about that. I didn't plan on starting this late. Some things kind of happened and came up, so I had to watch SmackDown a little bit later than I wanted to, but nonetheless, got it watched. Got the notes taken, and I am here ready to talk about it with you guys. So, we're going to get into that for sure. I'm also going to give just some quick predictions for, you know, the card at Survivor Series this weekend. Won't go too in-depth. I mean, you guys are going to get a full Survivor Series prediction show on Saturday, I believe. But I will just run through the card at the end of the show myself and just kind of tell you what I think about it. But as far as the SmackDown itself goes, we will dive right in here. And this SmackDown actually broke the trend of opening with Roman Reigns by opening the show with the Street Profits. They were involved in a backstage segment where they were essentially just promoting Survivor Series. They made a couple references to The Undertaker's final farewell, and Big E actually rises up from behind them wearing a sombrero doing his impersonation of The Undertaker. And they go back and forth kind of as they have for the last few weeks, and Big E tells them that they don't have to prove anything to him because The New Day is here on SmackDown tonight. And right then, less than 5 minutes into the show, I was already like, oh man, some Raw guys are going to be here tonight. But sure enough, that was the case. And almost immediately after that, they lead into the normal introduction where Big E is basically doing his screaming intro. They actually show him do it, which they don't really do that very often. It's kind of cool. You see him actually scream at the top of his lungs. But basically, Xavier and Kofi, they come out to the ring, and they actually acknowledge that they're not supposed to be there. So I did appreciate that. But they say that because that they are 2 days away from Survivor Series, they have something to say to the Street Profits. They really don't say anything too meaningful. I'm reading here. They say that it's a good thing that the Street Profits want the smoke because they aren't ready for this fire or something like that. I really wasn't sure what they meant, but they also begin to do their own tribute to The Undertaker by laying flat on their backs and doing his signature rise up to a sitting position. But while their eyes were still rolled in the back of their heads, Sami Zayn's music hits. And Sami comes out and basically criticizes them for obsessing over The Undertaker so close to Survivor Series instead of worrying about their own match and more important things such as Sami's match with Bobby Lashley. And he insists that instead of saying so much about The Undertaker, that how about they say something about the current Intercontinental Champion? And The New Day respond by saying that Sami looks like a recently divorced dad who just put a down payment on a studio apartment. And I actually thought that was pretty funny. I mean, no matter what you think about the New Day, when it comes to roasting people, there's not many people better than they are. So I kind of thought that was a little funny. But anyway, after they say that, Baron Corbin actually comes out. And believe it or not, he's actually spitting some truth here. And I know how many times you're going to say that in your life. But, I mean, he points out that the New Day don't belong on SmackDown. He references their farewell match a month ago. And he even mentions Drew showing up last week. So I am glad that somebody is publicly acknowledging the incompetence and lack of logic behind all of this. But Xavier responds by saying that their farewell match was their final match as SmackDown superstars. Now they're Raw superstars just visiting. So that pretty much, I mean, that kind of felt like a little kick to the shins. Like, yeah, we know we're messing up, but whatever. Deal with it. So I kind of just took that for what it was. But as Baron Corbin kind of continues to demand them to leave the ring, Dolph Ziggler's music hits and him and Robert Roode come to the ring. And Ziggler and Roode actually start to call out the New Day for costing them their opportunity at the tag team titles by getting drafted to Raw. And I'm sure there's some holes in that logic, but who cares? I don't exactly remember how that played out. I do remember that they had an opportunity, but I thought that kind of got settled on Raw somehow. I may need to look it up and kind of figure out for sure what happened there. But here in the ring with all these teams, or at least some teams, and then you have Corbin and Sami Zayn, who are basically a team of heels by default, Kofi and Xavier begin to try to instigate some competitive tension between the teams of Ziggler and Roode and Sami and Corbin, and they even offer propose an opportunity at their tag team titles for whoever wins the match. And as they continue to instigate, it kind of looks like Ziggler and Roode are going to be up for it, but they immediately turn around, cheap shot the New Day, and it quickly becomes a 4-on-2 beatdown until the Street Profits come out and save the day for the New Day, leading to an 8-man tag match after the commercial break. But as far as this 8-man tag match goes, I was kind of confused as to how it was going to go, because, I mean, it was pretty obvious that that's what they were trying to set up. Whenever the Street Profits came out, it was pretty obvious that there was going to be an 8-man tag match. But did they just throw the whole sanctioned, unsanctioned rules out the window? Because, I mean, the New Day are still Raw superstars, and they showed up on SmackDown. So why were they able to be in a normal 8-man tag match whenever Drew McIntyre had to be in an unsanctioned match, Braun Strowman had to be in an unsanctioned match about a couple months ago? You guys all remember that. So that kind of did not make a whole lot of sense to me. But nonetheless, this match happened immediately following that commercial break. And it started off basically with the team of New Day and Street Profits in control and working together pretty smoothly for the most part before Kofi accidentally took out Montez Ford with a crossbody that was intended for Baron Corbin. But Ziggler's team took full advantage of that mishap and began to wear down Montez Ford in their corner. And then somewhat later on in the match, somewhat of a resurgence from both members of the New Day. They kind of put their team back in position to take control of the match until Angelo Dawkins aggressively tagged himself in by slapping Woods on the back. And Sammy, who hadn't entered this match yet, was basically forced to enter the match by a desperate tag from Robert Roode. He gets a spine buster from Dawkins and a frog splash from the heavens by Montez Ford, and the Street Profits pick up the win for their team. They kind of have a face-off at the end of the match, holding up their championships, trying to get you excited. But at this point, the only thing I could really think about was that whole unsanctioned situation. We don't see the New Day again for the rest of the night, so we won't see them until Survivor Series. And I'm not sure if we'll see them again after Raw, but whenever Baron Corbin actually referenced the whole, you guys had your farewell match, for some reason, and I'm not sure who all remembers this, but during the original draft, or at least that first one they did, like around 2002, I feel like, it showed the Dudley Boys backstage, kind of how they were doing it. All the wrestlers were back in a room sitting on chairs, just basically waiting to get drafted. this was the draft where The Rock went number one overall, just to kind of maybe jog your memory a little bit. But basically, I can't remember if it was Bubba Ray or D-Von, but one of them got drafted, and they literally stood up, gave each other a hug, and whoever it was that got drafted left. There was no farewell, there was no one last tag team. They actually legitimately split up for at least a year or so. I'm not sure exactly how long, but I mean, it was definitely a lengthy time that they weren't together. But it's just, it kind of reminds me just of how things are today as far as the, I mean, everybody needs a farewell match. It only lasts a little bit. They come back the next week. They have some lame excuse, like now they're on a different show and they're visitors. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not going to get too much further into that. But it's just things that, I mean, if you're paying attention, you notice every single week. And I don't really understand why they continue to break these rules on a regular basis. And next, we had some backstage segments. We get a little bit of Daniel Bryan, actually, with Kayla Braxton. The first thing I noticed when I saw Daniel was he actually has a new haircut. It's kind of similar to what The Miz has, and maybe not that close, but it's definitely something I have not seen on Daniel Bryan yet. So it's nice to see him have a little bit of a tweak to his character. But anyway, like I said, he's backstage with Kayla Braxton. And before they kind of start their interview that they do eventually have, you can kind of see Sami Zayn in the background following the referee. And he's complaining to the ref about something that happened in the match. And I'm assuming that he notices a smirk on Daniel Bryan's face, because he then asks, oh, you think this is funny, huh? And then after complaining and ranting to Daniel Bryan with his finger in his face, Daniel Bryan slowly pulls his mask up over his face and casually shoves Sammy to the ground. Sammy just has a shocked look on his face, kind of gets up. He says that Daniel Bryan's lucky that he has a match this Sunday, or he would make him pay for that. And he says that he doesn't forget, and that he promises this isn't over. He goes to commercial break, comes back, and we do get that interview with Daniel and Kayla. And she compliments his new haircut and immediately asks him about what happened to him last time we saw him, which was the attack by Jey Uso. And she asked why he came back so soon to face Jey after seeing how far he's willing to go. And Daniel kind of gives a passionate response by saying that he isn't concerned about coming back early. Jey should be the one concerned. And like he said to him, Jey that is, in an interview a couple weeks ago, it won't be personal. So you can kind of count on Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn being in a program in the near future. I would probably bet after Survivor Series, though I probably wouldn't put my money on that because how inconsistent the booking is with this type of stuff. So, but that would just be something that would definitely strike my interest. Daniel Bryan could also maybe get in something with Roman Reigns after Survivor Series. This is pretty much a big hurdle for us to go through to see. I mean, I knew this was going to be a hurdle as soon as the draft happened. Because I knew that they were going to do this whole Raw versus SmackDown thing, and that it wasn't going to be legit as far as the actual brand split itself. But after Survivor Series, they really don't have any excuses to lean on, and we should see more of a structure. At least that's what I'm hoping for. But when that does happen, I wouldn't mind seeing Daniel Bryan get involved in a championship program, whether it's the Intercontinental, Universal, it doesn't really matter. I think it's probably more likely that he gets involved with something with Sami Zayn. So that is what I'm kind of more setting my sights on. But nonetheless, I just want to see Daniel Bryan getting involved in something meaningful. And it just seems perfect that he gets involved with Sami Zayn and sets up for something leading up to TLC. But staying with the backstage stuff here, we get Adam Pearce, who is he's shown backstage explaining to someone, we couldn't see who, but he was explaining to them that he, as in Adam Pearce, has the opportunity to handpick the final member of Team SmackDown for Survivor Series. He's referring to the men's team, and he begins listing reasons why he chose this specific person. The person is revealed to be Otis, who was shown celebrating the news with his new coach, I believe, Chad Gable. So that's all we got as far as the Otis stuff with Gable. We didn't really get much other than he got handed a spot on the team. And I'm not very confident about the team as a whole as far as SmackDown's men team. I thought that Daniel Bryan should have been on that team, but he lost his qualifying match, I believe, to Jey Uso. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I know he lost it at some point, and that really doesn't matter, though, if he lost one opportunity, because, as we're about to find out, Natalya herself gets her fourth straight opportunity to get on the women's team. But nonetheless, Otis gets handed a spot, so we will see if the Alpha Academy has affected his actual wrestling ability and might maybe add a few more wrinkles to his character. It was pretty much the same old stuff whenever we saw him. I don't expect it to be anything drastic overnight. This will probably be something that happens slowly, but I would love to see Otis have something different about him because he is in desperate need of a change. But like I alluded to a little bit ago, Natalya overhears this exchange, and she approaches Adam Pearce, questioning him for giving Otis the spot and how it's not fair to have her face Tamina in a qualifying match for a spot on the winning for a spot on the women's team. And Adam Pearce basically just says, "Sorry, I'm giving Bayley a spot." And he tells Natalya that she does have to earn it in her match next with Tamina. So that was kind of a savage move by Adam Pearce, especially if you watched it live. Me reading it doesn't do it justice. He definitely kind of just said, "Yeah, I'm giving the spot to Bayley. You got to earn yours." And she does have that qualifying match next, and she does win it. She makes Tamina tap in less than 5 minutes. But I think that the more important stuff, as far as this match goes, is Bayley and Bianca Belair, who were on commentary. They were kind of, you know, taking the verbal jabs at each other. As you could probably guess, Bayley proclaims herself as the team captain like everybody else. And all the women come out to the ring afterwards and kind of have that little moment. And as far as I feel, or how I feel about the men's team, it's even worse with the SmackDown women's team. I have absolutely no hope that the SmackDown women's team is going to win on Sunday, and I know that's kind of burying my lead as far as my predictions go, but man, I am not a fan of how this team is put together. Obviously, you guys know I like Bianca Belair. I'm a huge Liv Morgan fan. I do like Natalya too, although she's pretty cold right now as far as her character goes. She had four opportunities, and it took the fourth time for her to earn that spot on the team. But as far as what they're going up against for the Raw women's team, I really do not feel like they're going to have much of a chance at all. But you never know. I mean, I'm sure we've seen even crazier things happen at Survivor Series for sure. And moving on here, we get the contract signing between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. And this contract signing starts by Roman Reigns making Adam Pearce stand up and get out of his seat, so Roman could literally sit at the head of the table. And when Roman starts addressing Drew, he basically says that he knew that Drew could beat Randy, and he knew that he could win the WWE Championship, although he says that Paul Heyman didn't believe that he could do it, but Roman did. And he says that that is because that he has been in Drew's shoes before. He says that something Paul Heyman told him years ago rings true to Drew for true. Sorry, I'm completely butchering this. He says that something that Paul said years ago rings true for Drew today. Yeah, that's definitely a tongue twister. But what that is that he said Drew is the right guy in the right place at the wrong time. And Drew basically responds by saying that he knows Roman is just trying to get under his skin and that he's trying to get him to overreact, but he won't do it. He signs the contract and begs Roman to underestimate him. He tells him to use these last 2 days of peace to prepare for war. And from then on, Roman just essentially begins to make a mockery of Drew. He once again refers to him as a secondary champion, a fill-in, the guy who they call when Roman Reigns is busy. He tells Drew that someday he's going to look back and thank Roman for all the lessons that he taught him. And then he signs the contract and tells Drew that he's always going to be his favorite number two. I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment here, but this just feels like Roman's best mic work. It feels like every week it's his, he breaks his record for his best mic work that he does. The arrogance just kind of pours out of him. I feel like the old Roman Reigns could not have been able to hang with Drew McIntyre on the mic, let alone completely outshine him. So that alone should tell us how far he's come as in terms of evolving his character. This match definitely has WrestleMania written all over it. It's bittersweet that there's ultimately nothing at stake here other than quote-unquote bragging rights. So I do feel like this match is kind of getting wasted here, but I mean, I'm still going to enjoy it. These are two dudes who are at the top of their game for their respective shows. They each bring something to the table. It's hard to really see one of them taking a clean loss. That's why I do feel like interference is probably going to be big in this match. But that is something I will get to probably a little bit later in my when I run through my predictions. But after this, we get the match that we saw Seth Rollins beg for last week, which is Seth Rollins versus Buddy Murphy. And the Mysterios actually accompany Murphy to the ring. And when they get out there and the match begins, these two, as in Seth and Buddy, they start this match at 100 miles an hour. They have in-ring chemistry, and it shows every time they get in there. Rey Mysterio does get involved. He gets thrown on an announce table. Dominic tried to help. Seth essentially just swats him like a fly. And Rey and Dominic, they stay there after they get up, along with Ali, and they're basically just Buddy Murphy's private cheerleading squad. I mean, that's kind of what they were on the outside of the ring. They got a lot of camera time. They showed their reactions every time Buddy Murphy would do good or bad. But with how Seth was kind of just swatting away the Mysterios and just dominating the match for the most part, you kind of thought like, okay, Seth Rollins is really going to, you know, build his momentum back a little bit and kind of get his feet underneath him and maybe get moving here. But that's ultimately not what happens in this match, because Seth does spend some valuable time taunting Murphy by repeatedly telling him that he gave him everything. He says that probably like 5 or 6 times, which causes Murphy to recover enough to hit a couple of his flying knees, pin Seth Rollins, secure the win, and hopefully close this chapter. I mean, I don't know how they can keep going from this, but he did have the Mysterios out there, but this was as clean as that kind of match can get. Whenever you have those people out there, I mean, I really didn't understand why the Mysterios came out there to begin with. At first, I thought Murphy was going to send them away, and I thought that would have sent a better message, like, no, I'm going to handle this on my own. I don't need you guys to beat Seth. I'm going to beat Seth by myself. I feel like that would have been a stronger, I hate to use WWE's words, but a stronger statement by Buddy Murphy going forward that he can hold his own on his own, and I don't really feel like we got that. So I guess technically that could be something that they lean on for Seth to come out next week and say, you didn't beat me, you needed the Mysterios, and continue to drag this thing out until TLC. But I know I speak for myself and a lot of others when I hope that that does not happen. But after the Murphy and Rollins match, we get Michael Cole in the ring with Sasha Banks and Asuka. Asuka being the 4th Raw superstar to make her appearance on SmackDown tonight. And from the looks of this segment, at least as far as Asuka goes, Sasha seems that she's back to being heel by default. That's definitely the way she was kind of talking during this segment, like talking to Asuka, talking to Michael Cole. I mean, she definitely was putting off that heel vibe, which she kind of has been doing. I mean, she never did make the official babyface turn. As Matt's alluded to several times, it was kind of just that by default, which is kind of what was going on here. And Cole actually brings up how Asuka got the title in the first place, which is by beating Banks at SummerSlam. But the thing about Sasha, it's kind of hard to figure out what she is as far as heel and babyface, just strictly because she was technically the babyface with Bayley. You can kind of say she's the babyface here with Carmella, but whenever she's talking to Asuka, she's completely doing the heel role. So I don't know if she's just fully owning that tweener kind of character, or if, I mean, it's just trying to juggle three feuds at once. But I mean, I guess I shouldn't say three, because as far as Bayley goes, there was nothing concerning her and Sasha today. It was strictly Asuka until Sasha gets attacked from behind by Carmella for the third week in a row. And obviously she gets the better of her. And that actually kind of got me thinking that that's really all we've gotten from Carmella, besides her little weekly vignettes that she was doing that were pre-recorded. We really haven't seen her talk or address the WWE fans. She's basically just showed up, attacked Sasha, and left. So next week, I'm kind of hoping that we get a little bit of something from Carmella as far as why she set her sights on Sasha. I'm guessing, I mean, it's something probably strictly to do with the Women's Championship, but you never know, there could be a little bit more. So I'm hoping that next week we might get a little bit from Carmella explaining what it is she wants to do going forward on this SmackDown division, or if she just wants that Women's Championship. Moving on here to the main event, though, we had Daniel Bryan versus Jey Uso. And although both men said that it wasn't personal, it definitely felt personal from the beginning. As soon as the bell rang, these two came out swinging. There was a lot of kicks to the ribs, some knife edge chops. Bryan actually went through an announce table at one point. Each one of these guys had their own little run, dominating on the mat with some submission locks. But Bryan seemed to basically get stronger as the match went on. And Uso went to the top rope to hit the Uso splash, and Daniel Bryan put his foot up to stop him in his tracks, and Bryan rolled him up to sneak away with a revenge victory over Jey Uso. I was actually really glad to see Daniel Bryan in a match on SmackDown. There was a couple weeks where he wasn't on air, so I figured maybe that they were trying to play off an injury and maybe have him come back a little bit later in the year and set up something bigger. But to see him come back, have a good match, maybe set something up with Sami Zayn, that was something that I definitely was glad to see. And I hope that maybe he finds himself in a feud, like I alluded to earlier, for a championship after the Survivor Series dust settles. As far as Jey Uso goes, I feel like he's feeling more natural in this role. I actually noticed this today and I kind of thought about it, and it is what let me know that Jey Uso is definitely, I don't want to say winning me over, but I mean, he's earning my respect as a singles superstar, because I really, if I were to see next week the Usos come out and try to do their normal thing, it wouldn't look right. I mean, Jey Uso would stick out like a sore thumb, like, nah, he should be doing something else right now. I mean, we've seen him for the past month do something else. So I guess, if anything, Jey Uso has somewhat established himself as someone who can go by themselves. And whenever Jimmy gets back, they're going to have a lot to do there as far as if they're going to keep them together. Obviously, I mention it every week, form that heel faction, or maybe have just a brother-on-brother feud. That's something that no one's really said. Maybe Jimmy isn't all right with all this stuff that's going on. So whenever he comes back, maybe he tries to, you know, get Jey Uso to turn his back on Roman. That's a lot of speculation down the road, but you get what I'm saying, is that this opens up a lot of different possibilities for Jey Uso going forward. And I do want to see what happens whenever his brother comes back. But as far as the action that happened on SmackDown, that is pretty much it. One thing I did notice is this is 2 weeks in a row without Lars Sullivan. I'm not sure if that's on purpose, if they're kind of just giving him a little bit of time, trying to milk this a little bit and stretch it out. I do not know. But I am hoping that we do hear, I was kind of getting into that, a little bit of his character depth that they were starting to show. They kind of just didn't give us any reason why he's not on air. They kind of just stopped showing him. But that can mean anything. I mean, he could be here next week. He could actually have a match finally next week. I do imagine that they have something planned for him because they were giving him those interviews with Michael Cole and Corey Graves where he was basically telling you a little bit more about himself. I was hoping that we can get some more of that, and I'm hoping that we still do. But that was not the case tonight. Just kind of wanted to maybe bring it to y'all's attention to remind you that he has not been on the screen here in a couple weeks. But we've seen that with Daniel Bryan. Sami Zayn was off the screen for a couple weeks too. So it might not necessarily mean anything. We just have to kind of monitor that going forward. But like I said, that's the end of SmackDown. So I will get into these Survivor Series picks real quick. And I'm not going to spend too much time on each of these picks. I'm kind of just going to tell you who I picked, maybe give you a little bit of reasons why I was leaning in that direction. And I'll start here with the men's team, the Raw versus SmackDown men's match. And I'm actually going to pick SmackDown here, mainly because I'm banking on the Raw team self-imploding and the talent of Owens and Rollins being enough to bring home the win. As far as the women's match goes, though, I am definitely picking Raw. I feel like Nia and Shayna are obvious mismatches. Those two alone could probably be all five of the SmackDown women's wrestlers on that team. And then you factor in the speculated Lana possibilities, and that makes this one a pretty easy pick. Next is the tag team match with New Day and the Street Profits. I am going to go with the Street Profits here. I just feel like as of right now, the Street Profits are a better tag team. I don't have a horse in the race, so to speak, from a personal standpoint. So, I mean, I'll go with the SmackDown team just to kind of represent here. I think it makes sense to give the win to the team with the most upside, as well as the team who could use the win more, even though I don't necessarily think a win over the New Day, where no titles are on the line, will really mean much anyway. Next, we have the Intercontinental Championship versus the United States Championship, Lashley versus Sami Zayn, and I am going to go with Bobby Lashley here. I think the numbers game could come into effect. This is the only true heel versus heel match of the night. I wouldn't be surprised if Sami got the win, but I feel like with how both of these guys have been booked respectively as of late, it seems like Sami would have to luck into a win, and with the Hurt Business possibly in Lashley's corner, the odds might be stacked too high for Sami to get this one done. And next, with the Women's Championship match, Sasha and Asuka, I'm going with Asuka. If this match was clean, with no interference, I would probably pick Sasha, but I am fully expecting Carmella to get involved in some way, costing Sasha the match and setting them up for a program leading up to TLC. So Asuka is my official pick there. And that leaves us with the Universal Champion versus the WWE Champion, Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre. And of course, I'm going to pick Roman Reigns here. This is another match that could easily have some outside interference. For example, Randy Orton, The Fiend, Sheamus. It's obviously the caliber of a WrestleMania main event when you consider where these two guys are at the point in their careers right now. There's no way Roman can take a loss here. This early in his heel run, but Drew was certainly not an opponent to overlook. The more I think about it, the more I think that this match ends at the hands of somebody else to protect both champions. So that's what I wrote down for that match. And all the other Survivor Series matches, I actually misread the Hell in a Cell card and predicted a couple matches that weren't even on that card. So I made sure to hopefully get this one right this time. But that should do it for this episode, guys. I do appreciate you listening. It's 2:59 a.m. right now, so I did make it to 3 o'clock. No problem whatsoever. I would do this every week if I had to get this show to you guys Saturday morning like you guys are used to. I do apologize again for not having a top 5 here for you. I will make up for it next week for sure and have one for you. But as for the episode of SmackDown and this SmackDown review, I think that will just about do it. So I appreciate you guys listening and tuning in, and I will talk to you next week.